we'll go ahead and get started.
So today I want to talk about two applications of the LMS adaptive filter. The first one is adaptive noise cancellation, and the second one is adaptive line enhancement. These are two variations of the adaptive filter that we've been discussing for the past few days. And we'll talk about the configuration of the system and derive some properties of these estimators and discuss the significance of them. I've provided some links to various related topics, a couple nice pages on Wiener filtering, which is essentially what we're talking about, and a couple things on adaptive noise cancellation. So let's begin by talking about adaptive noise cancellation. One of the most important applications of adaptive filtering is adaptive noise cancellation. This was originally proposed by Widrow in 1975. I've provided a link to a book that Widrow and Stearns wrote, which is very well known in this area, that has a lot of good information about these kinds of adaptive filters. The work actually precedes this. Adaptive filtering has been something that dates back to the post-World War II era. It was used extensively in radar systems at the end of World War II. In fact, it was credited with one of the significant developments towards the end of World War II, with the ability of radar to autonomously track targets and things like that. So the configuration that we'll look at is shown to the right here. Adaptive noise cancellation is concerned with the enhancement of noise corrupted signals. So at the top we have the signal S of n plus some noise V0 of n. And along this second path we have X of n, which is going to be a signal V1 of n. X of n is then processed through a filter, which we'll consider to be a linear filter, such that Y of n is produced, and we'll take the difference between Y of n and this S of n plus V0 of n that'll produce the error signal E of n, and then as before we'll adjust the coefficients of this filter to minimize E of n. So the configuration is essentially the same as what we've been talking about, but from a point of view of how we adjust the coefficients of the filter, but the way we use this is much different. Now, the sort of compelling thing about this configuration is that ANC requires no prior knowledge of the signal or noise. Prior to the introduction of these filters, there were a lot of techniques employed that dealt with sort of heuristic estimates of the noise. For example, one of the more common noise cancellation techniques was a method called spectral subtraction, where you would try to get an independent estimate of the noise, and then you would try to subtract that noise spectrum from the signal spectrum. This worked well for applications like speech signals, where you could look for periods in the speech signal where there was no speech energy, and you could use that to estimate the noise and get a fairly decent estimate of the noise. But this didn't really work well for a lot of applications, such as modems and some of the geophysical stuff. So it was really not a good way to do noise cancellation. What we were looking for was a more robust way that would not require an offline, if you will, estimate of the noise. We're looking for a system that can automatically learn the characteristics of the noise in real time, in an online way. And that's what adaptive noise cancellation, that's what makes this approach somewhat unique. So it's a variation of optimal filtering which uses a secondary or reference signal. We're going to be required to get an independent estimate of the noise, but you'll note that that doesn't have to be an estimate of the actual noise. All that's really required is that this estimate of the noise can be processed through some filter to produce an estimate of the actual noise that's corrupting the signal. And in a second, I'll show you how that works
in a practical sense.
So the reference measurement should contain no signal. That's important. You'll notice here S of n appears in the desired signal, but S of n does not appear in X of n. And but it should contain noise that is correlated with the original noise. And by correlated, we simply mean that this noise processed through a linear filter should produce that noise. So the linear filter is essentially a weighted sum of weighted delays, which is essentially correlation. So this filter is going to try to learn the difference between this noise and this noise so that we can invert this noise and produce V0 of n. The relation to adaptive filtering paradigm from the previous lecture then becomes pretty clear. The desired signal, what we call D of n, is replaced by S of n plus V0 of n. The system input, which we called X of n, is replaced by the reference signal, V1 of n. And the output is still the error signal. We're still going to adapt the coefficients of this filter based on the strength of the error signal. So the reference signal becomes critical to this kind of thing. The signal is measured, this desired signal is measured in the noisy ambient environment. So you might think about, given a couple application spaces over here, one that's very popular is a hands-free microphone in a car. And as you speak into this hands-free microphone, you're going to be collecting this desired signal, D of n, and that signal obviously is going to have not just the speech, but also the ambient noise. Another application of this kind of technology is noise-canceling headphones. These have become pretty popular, where you have an ambient, you have the desired signal is what you're hearing, but that's a mixture of the electrical signal that's sent through the headphones plus the noise generated from the acoustics in the acoustic environment. And what you'd like to do then is to estimate the noise and inject, in addition to the reference the good signal, the music, you'd like to inject a signal that somehow cancels the ambient noise. Noise canceling headphones have become pretty popular. You may have seen the advertisements for like the Bose things that you can wear on the airplane and have a nice flight because it cancels all the noise. It's a very interesting technology, very tricky because it doesn't work perfectly, of course, like most of these things, but it can be very effective under certain conditions. There are other applications, obviously, in the military. When you're in a high noise environment, that's one of the areas where this was first developed. If you talk about people flying helicopters, they typically use an open air microphone in a helicopter cockpit, which is very, very noisy. So often the signal that comes out of that microphone is 0 dB signal noise ratio, very bad signal. Fighter pilots with helmets, astronauts, all these kinds of applications use the same basic principle that you take the signal that you collect through the microphone, you get an independent estimate of the noise, and then you try to do some noise cancellation. So the noise is measured from a different location, typically close to the noise source. Now in a car, cars kind of an interesting application. I've done a lot of work in that environment. In an automobile, one way you might do this is to actually put a microphone underneath the driver's seat so that you measure the noise at the source, which is the sort of the noise coming from the car being on the road and such. Alternately, what sometimes is done is the microphone will be put along the frame of the windshield to try to get independent estimates of the noise. People have looked at applications where instead of just using one microphone for the signal and one microphone for the noise, you actually use multiple microphones. That's a topic called array processing, something we won't talk about in this course, but it's actually a similar application of the same kind of adaptive filter, only now you're dealing with multiple inputs. The adaptive noise canceller can be thought of as an array with two microphones. And there's no reason to think you could not extend the number of channels sort of arbitrarily and get increased noise reduction. And in effect, that's what essentially microphone arrays do. But the problem in an automobile is that the noise comes from all different directions, and there's many different types of noise. So if you put the microphone under the seat of the car, for example, you will get samples, you'll get pretty good estimates of what we call road noise, the noise coming from the car driving over a concrete or asphalt-type pavement. But you won't get good estimates of vehicles kind of passing through from the side and things. So there's a lot of art that goes into where is the best place to position this microphone. But from a theoretical point of view, all it would really require is that we get this correlated estimate of the noise that does not contain estimates of the signal, the speech signal, audio signal, or whatever it is you're trying to clean up. Because if it does, if this signal does contain samples of the speech signal, the signal of interest, what's going to happen is the adaptive filter's going to try to cancel some of that out. So you're going to then end up distorting the signal of interest. Now, that's a pretty serious thing, and in fact, in most applications, most real applications where I've seen this kind of thing deployed, one of two things happens. Either the amount of noise cancellation is so small that it doesn't really have much impact, and it's not really worth the cost of doing this, or the corruption that this process introduces on the desired signal, for example, the speech signal, creates undesired distortion of the speech signal. Yes, so why is that a concern of ours? Well, if you think about a pattern recognition application like speech recognition, for example, you will typically train the speech recognition system without the noise cancellation being applied. And then you'll go and use the system in the environment where the noise cancellation is going to be applied, and you'll find out that the noise cancellation distorts the speech. And that distortion causes the downstream pattern recognition system to perform very poorly. So it's important that this signal not have remnants of the signal of interest, or you'll end up adding distortion to the signal of interest during this process because of the way the adaptive filter works. It doesn't really know the difference between these two. All it really knows is the difference between these two. So there's some dangers in using this kind of an approach, but it's a classical treatment to trying to remove noise from a signal. So we'll go ahead and talk about it today. So with this scenario, we can write the error signal as being D of N minus Y of N, and that's just S of N plus V0 of N minus Y of N. So we can square the error signal, and we can take the expectation, something we've been doing now for a while. So we can take the expectation of V squared of N. Well, that'll just be the expectation of this squared, which is just going to be the expectation of S squared plus the expectation of this, the difference between these two squared, plus this cross term twice S of N times V0 of N minus Y of N. So some of the terms here should look familiar. For example, the expectation of S squared of N. Some of the terms here should cause us some concern, such as the product of S of N and V0 of N. So we'll take a little closer look at this. In adaptive noise canceling, one of the things we do is we assume that the signal S of n is uncorrelated with V0 of n and V1 of n. And you can understand why we're going to want to do that when you look at all these cross terms here. It would be nice if some of these would go away so that when we differentiate the error with respect to the filter coefficients, we can get a very reasonable, very simple equation for the optimal coefficients that does not involve things we don't know, like the properties of the noise. Now, is in fact V0 of n and V1 of n uncorrelated with S of n? Well, in some applications, you could say they are. For example, if you're in a car and you're talking through a hands-free microphone and there's some noise, perhaps a truck driving by your car and your windows rolled down or the road noise itself, probably a pretty good approximation that those are uncorrelated with the speed signal. But in other situations, such as this noise, this reverberant room, even if you put a microphone, let's say there's noise from this projector, so even if you put a microphone over here, obviously as I talk in this room, my voice is reflected off the walls, and some of it will be picked up by that microphone. So then what people would typically do is they would probably place the microphone, use a directional microphone, point it towards the noise source and try to baffle it so that signal would not come in from other directions. But obviously for the analysis of this filter, it's going to be very convenient that these two are uncorrelated. So for a fixed filter, S of n is also uncorrelated with F of n and V1 of n. So the output of the filter will also be uncorrelated with S of n. Now again, that's a bit of a stretch because if, for example, V1 of n is white noise, when it goes through this filter, it becomes colored noise. Colored noise has correlation, and the chances of that colored noise being correlated with the signal are greater, but we're going to assume, that, again, that these two are uncorrelated. So this allows the error. If we can make those assumptions, many of these cross terms are going to go away, and this allows us to write the error in a more comfortable looking form, the expectation of S squared of n plus the expectation of V0 of n minus Y of n squared. What do we know the expectation of S squared of n as? The expectation of S squared of n is just what? It's just the power of S of n. It's also the autocorrelation function evaluated at the lag of zero. So we've actually dealt with this solution, this type of equation before, and you may recall we use the transforms to show that the filter, the optimal filter, is just the cross-correlation between X and D, the cross-correlation between X and D, divided by the autocorrelation of X. This is one way to get the desired frequency response or the Z transform of the filter F. Now for our noise cancellation system, D of N is equal to S of N plus V0 of N, X of N is equal to V1 of N, so this equation becomes the cross-correlation between V1 and V0, again, because we're assuming this uncorrelated noise, divided by the cross-correlation of V1, the autocorrelation of V1. The noises V0 and V1 are correlated in some way, and we assume they can be modeled using a linear filter. So we can write that V0 of n is equal to H of n times convolved with V1 of n, and that then shows us that these two filters are essentially the same. Now, this assumption that V0 of n can be reconstructed from a linear filter being applied to V1 of n, of course, again, that's a bit of a stretch. If you have any kind of nonlinearities in your system, that's not going to be the case. And in most common environments where this is applied, such as if you talk about, for example, talking from a hands-free microphone in a car, that's going to be a very limiting assumption, sort of a first-order approximation. But obviously, doing that is going to allow us to create some filter update equations and some mathematics that are tractable, so we'll restrict ourselves to that.
Hey, Ken.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, could you define D of N and X of N again?
Sure. So D of N, we call that our desired signal. But what that really is in this application space is the source signal, which is our signal of interest, S of N, and the noise, V0 of N. So this is what you would collect, for example, if you're talking about a hands-free microphone, let's say mounted on the visor. The signal we're really interested in is what's coming out of the speaker's mouth. But we don't really get access to that directly. We could have the person wear a head-mounted microphone with noise-canceling mic, but you'd get really upset if every time you had to get in your car, you had to put on a microphone. Now, we had actually, in the days of early days of developing this kind of stuff, we actually toyed with those ideas and found out pretty quickly that people found that unacceptable from a usability standpoint. But the reason the desired, we call the desired signal X of N, S of N plus V0 of N, this microphone here is also going to pick up the ambient noise. And we actually want that because we're trying to, that's what we're trying to cancel. Okay. Now this signal, you might say, well, why not just get an independent estimate of V0? And then the problem's easy. Just take S of N plus V0, subtract V0, and we get back S of N. The goal here is to recover S of N. Maybe I didn't make that clear enough. Well, what we can, in fact, for some signals, like speech signals, we can, in fact, do something like that. We can look in the speech waveform for moments where we know there's no speech energy and it's only noise energy. We can use what's called a speech activity detector to determine that. And then we can estimate the noise statistics from that point in time. And then we can use those noise statistics to subtract off the noise. That's actually a process that's called spectral subtraction. Works, you know, doesn't work all that well, but it was one of the original techniques developed. Here, we have a much more flexible structure where we say all we really need is a second estimate that contains only the noise but not the speech. So in an application like the noise cancellation in this room, if I don't know if you've listened to my voice on these recordings, but you can hear the reverberation of the room because that microphone not only picks up my voice, but it picks up my voice being reflected off these hard surfaces and off the walls and things. But you can also, on those recordings, hear the whine, the whirring of the fan in the back from the projector. Now, our goal might be we could actually do this a couple of ways. One goal might be to remove the reverberation of this room. Another goal might be to remove the noise from this projector. If it was to remove the noise from this projector, we'd want to put a separate microphone close to the projector that estimates only the noise and not my voice. If we were doing reverberation in this room, we'd probably put the second microphone in the back of the room where my voice is not so strong. Okay, so what we're going to try to do now is remove, our ultimate goal is to remove this signal. But to do that, we can't simply subtract V1. We have to subtract a filtered version of V1, which is going to be what, which is Y of N. So we've shown that for the LMS adaptive filter, the solution in our general sense was this equation. For this particular configuration, the solution becomes the cross-correlation of V1 and V0 divided by the autocorrelation of V1. And that's not surprising because that's essentially, as we'll see in a moment, constructing the power spectral density that it takes to turn V0 into V1. Okay? You don't look convinced yet. Okay? So, taking this equation, we can write that the cross-correlation of V1, V0 is related to the autocorrelation of V1 through a filter H of E of J omega. Taking this equation, which just comes from here, we note that the autocorrelation of Y of N, or V0, is equal to the power spectral density squared of H of E of J omega, R of V1, V1. So what this tells us then is that if we adapt the coefficients of this filter using the LMS algorithm based on E of N, these two filters should essentially converge, and that's what we want. This filter F becomes a replica of the underlying process that transforms V1 into V0. So we can sort of verify this by noting that if Y of N is F of N times V1 of N, and if F of N is just H of N, then Y of N will be V0 of N, and the error signal then will be S of N plus V0 of N and minus V0 of N, and we'll get back S of N. So if everything works properly, when we train this thing, F converges to H, and we do perfect noise cancellation. Now, unfortunately, there is going to be leakage, what's called leakage between these two. X of N will not just be V1 of N. Often, X of N is actually, you could actually reformulate this so that X of N is equal to S1 of N, where S1 of N is a filtered version of S of N plus V1 of N. And in fact, people have extended this formulation to deal with such a situation. And then there's some tricks you can do to estimate these two filters independently. But in the classical sense, so in fact, that's what's described here. So in practice, we have the signal plus V0 of N. X of N has some remnants of S of N in it, plus V1 of N. So Y of N then becomes a sum of our signal of interest, S of N, plus some noise term, V of N. And we can actually define a signal-to-noise ratio which relates the autocorrelation of the recovered signal by the autocorrelation of this noise term. Now, this noise term contains two things. It contains our approximation to V0 of N, and it also contains the elements of this leakage term that haven't been removed. So we can look at the performance of this filter in terms of a signal-to-noise ratio, looking at the autocorrelation of this desired signal, assuming we might know that, divided by the autocorrelation of the noise. And if we drive this noise down to zero, then our signal-to-noise ratio gets better and better and the system performs well. So in practice, we can actually go a little bit further and deal with the fact that there will be leakage between these two signals. But from a theoretical point of view, in the classical adaptive noise cancellation approach, we assume there's no leakage between these two. So we update the filter coefficients using the same LMS algorithm that we've already discussed. We can do that, and we can do that as an adaptive filter and be assured that there will be convergence between these two. Now, we can characterize the performance of the system in terms of the signal-to-noise ratios of the system output and the system reference. And we can write an expression for the signal-to-noise ratio of the output and show that that's equal to 1 over signal-to-noise ratio of the reference. Now, I haven't included a derivation of this because I think the details of this aren't as important as the sort of conclusion that the SNR of the output, the error, if you look at the signal-to-noise ratio of this error, which is really defined as the ratio of the power of the error to the power of the desired signal, that is inversely proportional to the signal-to-noise ratio of the reference signal. So what this tells us is that as there's more and more leakage between these two, the overall performance of your filter is going to go down, which we would expect. Now, the other thing to point out is that this analysis assumes an idealized approximation of the adaptive filter as a fixed infinite two-sided Wiener filter. It neglects issues of stability, convergence, and steady state error. So what this two-sided filter is essentially a non-causal filter. It's got both negative and positive lags. And you might ask, well, in how many applications, if we impose the additional constraint that the filter must be causal, how does that impact the performance of the filter on real applications? Well, it turns out for most real-world applications like acoustic noise cancellation or electrical noise cancellation, constraining the filter to be one-sided or causal doesn't really impact things much. We get very good performance out of the system with that constraint. And then over the years, people have studied many, many implementations of this. This technology was fairly mature by the end of the 70s, but then with the advent of cell phones and hands-free microphones, audio teleconferencing microphones and things, a lot of work was done to extend this technology, and you'll still even today find people publishing papers on this topic. Most of these techniques are variants for specific conditions, or they involve the use of heuristics to better deal with the leakage between these two signals. Okay, so that's an overview of the first of these two applications, adaptive noise cancellation. Let's now turn our attention to a second application of adaptive noise the LMS filter with what's called adaptive line enhancement. In some applications, the signal of interest is an extremely narrow band signal that can be modeled as a sum of sine waves. The sum of sine waves, of course, is what we call a Fourier series, so it's not surprising that a lot of signals can be modeled by that. But in some applications, the signal of interest contains very, very narrow band signals. For example, sine waves. Sine waves have a power spectral density, which are very narrow, right? Now, if... I guess I don't have a blackboard here. I can write on a thing, but if you have a narrow signal like a sine wave, narrow band signal, and you try to apply a mean squared error technique like linear prediction, what's going to happen? Well, one of the things that's going to happen is that if you remember our spectral interpretation of linear prediction, using the standard approach, we try to minimize error across the entire spectrum. And such an approach is not going to focus only on the frequencies of interest, but it's going to look at the spectrum as a whole. So if the noise has some frequency shaping to it, the LCC filter is going to go after the noise as well. In some applications, in fact, originally when people were doing geophysics work in the 1960s with this kind of technology, there was very much interest in constraining the problem to be the signal of interest. The signal of interest is actually a weighted sum of sine waves. So you can think of this as a specific case of the adaptive noise canceler we talked about before. But the question we want to entertain is whether there's really two variants here. One is, if we constrain the signal to be of that form, can we go a little further with noise cancellation? And the answer to that, of course, is yes. Anytime you make constraints on a problem, you can generally do better. But the second variant here that's a little more serious is we're going to assume that the signal of interest is simply a delayed version of the actual signal. Now, if you think about that for a moment, why do we want to assume that? Well, again, in many applications, that's actually the case. If you're dealing with acoustic noise reduction from the echoes in this room, if your sensor is here, what you're collecting is not my voice here, it's my voice delayed so many milliseconds at that microphone. Well, unfortunately, the amount of that delay is comparable to the delay of my voice reflecting off some of these surfaces and arriving at that microphone. So you need to factor in that delay so that you get a better approximation to this filter. So adaptive line enhancer makes these two special assumptions, that the signal is a sum of sine waves and that X of N is a delayed version of D of N. So we can write the output Y of N as the convolution of F of N and our signal of interest S of N. And we're going to decompose this into two signals, one which is the amount due to the true signal of interest, and one which is the amount due to the noise. Since that's a linear filter, we can split these two out.
So it's F on convolution to D and not S.
Yeah, actually, if there were no noise, we would write it this way. I should have probably written the event there. Because it's going to be this signal is going to be the delayed version. And as we'll see in a moment, it's actually not just S of N, but it's really S of N minus delta plus the delayed noise. Now the goal of this system, the goal here is a little bit different. The goal is going to be to maximize the output signal to noise ratio. And we're going to define that as the power of the signal of interest, this term, divided by the power of the noise. So we're going to try to essentially separate those two. So the input signal we can write as D of N is equal to S of N, the signal of interest, and also the noise. The X of N is then going to be a delayed version of this signal, so it'll just be S of N minus delta if there's no noise. And we know the solution to this kind of problem is just the adaptive filter that we've already described. It's just, we can write the normal equation which says that the autocorrelation times the filter is equal to the cross-correlation. Now, we're going to assume a solution of the form of a constant B times cosine omega 0 I times T plus phi. Now, the reason that we'll do that is couple different ways to think about that. I don't know if you have background in communications theory, but if you had background in communications theory, you'd recognize that the best way to find the signal of interest in this case is to use what's called a matched filter. A matched filter is something that's developed in communication theory. When you want to detect a signal, it shows you that the optimal solution for that in the presence of additive Gaussian noise is simply to convolve the signal with a replica of your desired signal, or your known signal, in this case a cosine wave. So what matched filters do are they essentially build an impulse response which is a replica of your signal of interest, and you convolve that with the input signal, and then you take the peak value of the output of that filter. There's a discussion in the appendix of chapter 5 that describes that if you want to read more about that. Alternately, we can actually postulate this form and then go ahead and solve for the optimal values of this signal and then look at the performance of that filter. And that's what the path that we'll actually follow today. Okay, so for this application, we can go ahead and compute the things that we need to know for the normal equations. The right-hand side, the function g, well, that's just the expectation of d of n times x of n minus j. And here we can write that as the expectation of s of n times s of n minus j minus delta. And that we know, we recognize as simply the autocorrelation function delayed by an additional amount called delta. So the normal equation becomes the sum from I equals 1 to L minus 1 of the autocorrelation evaluated at J minus I times the filter F of filter coefficients, which is equal to this modified autocorrelation function. But the autocorrelation of this signal is going to be the autocorrelation of this, and it's going to have two components in it. It's going to have the autocorrelation of the noise and some autocorrelation of the signal. Now we can write an expression for this autocorrelation, and you'll notice that while we have noise, if you take the autocorrelation of this, you're going to have the autocorrelation of the sine waves plus noise, and that we can decompose into the autocorrelation of the noise times the autocorrelation of the cosine waves plus the cross term. But the cross term is going to be equal to zero because we're going to again assume that noise multiplied by these cosine waves and average, well, the noise is going to average to zero because the cosine signal is a periodic signal. So the product of those two will actually add to zero. And what we'll be left with for this autocorrelation function is the power of the noise times delta of m plus the power of the signal times cosine of omega zero mt. The first term reflects the autocorrelation of the noise, which we know if it's white noise, only has a value when the lag is equal to zero, and that value is equal to the power of the noise. The second term represents the autocorrelation of this signal. We're going to assume for this analysis that we only have one cosine. That way we can sort of make things a little simpler. Now, the autocorrelation of a cosine wave, you may, we can show, you may have done that in your random processes course, is equal to a cosine wave. That's not hard to understand, because how is the autocorrelation function related to the signal? If I give you a signal and I ask you to take the autocorrelation of that signal, and then I ask you to look at those two in the frequency domain, what can you tell me about the relationship between those two? If I take a signal and I take its Fourier transform, and I take that same signal and I compute an autocorrelation function, and I take the Fourier transform of the autocorrelation function, how are those two Fourier transforms related? Now, we've talked about this quite a few times now. The autocorrelation function produces the power spectral density squared, right? And the magnitude squared of the Fourier transform of the signal is equal to the Fourier transform of the autocorrelation function. So there's every reason to expect that the autocorrelation function of the signal is a cosine wave. But there's one significant difference between these two. You'll notice that the phase is gone in the autocorrelation function, because autocorrelation functions are remove or are blind to phase changes in the signal. In fact, for the signal, if the amplitude of the signal is a sub zero, we also know that the power of the signal is a zero squared over two. So we're going to go back and forth between these two notations, but the power of a sine wave is something easily calculated. So now we can combine these results into our normal equation. And I'm going to go through this kind of quickly, but I think, you know, the math is straightforward. So we're going to take this expression and substitute it for the autocorrelation here and the autocorrelation here. So that's going to leave the sum of this thing evaluated at j minus I, so we're going to have sigma w squared delta of j minus I plus sigma sub s squared cosine of omega zero of j minus I times t. And remember, we said we're going to postulate for the filter a solution of the form b cosine omega zero I capital T plus phi. And that's going to be equal to this R of J plus delta. So again, we'll substitute this expression and write the noise term plus a term related to the cosine. Now, this is a rather complicated looking term, but we can perform a couple simplifications. We can write that this delta of J plus delta, this is an impulse function, so the only time this is equal to zero is when the sum of these two arguments is equal to zero. Now, delta is a time delay, which means that delta is positive because it's a time delay. We're talking about a positive time delay. And J is greater than or equal to zero, so we can observe that this term is equal to zero. So the things related to this delta of J plus W, this delta of J plus delta go away. And similarly, so that basically reduces this equation to a term related to the noise plus a term related to the assumed solution, that's this term here, plus then this forcing function. Now, when we look at this term, we can observe that we have the product of two cosines here. And you may remember from your trigonometry that you can decompose this product into a sum and a difference of the arguments using the, I think they're called the half-angle formulas or some identity. And if you then sum those various terms from 0 to L minus 1, well, when you sum a cosine over essentially a period, we know that sum is equal to 0. The integral of cosines and sines are equal to 0. So if you integrate or sum over a complete period of the signal. So if the length of the filter is equal to essentially the one period of the signal, and that's something under our control, we can design the filter to be equal to its length to be one period of the cosine wave, then a lot of these cross terms will go to 0, and all we'll be left with are one of these terms, which is the term associated with cosine omega 0 jt plus phi. So this product will reduce to, the only term that won't be 0 will actually be the term that's associated with cosine of this argument minus that argument. And then when we sum over L, we get just L of those. So we can actually reduce this equation to a much more straightforward term, which has a term associated with the noise power, a term associated with the signal power, and that's equal to this term associated with the signal power. Now again, the details of this derivation are in the book. I'm just sort of sketching out how it goes. So the solution to this equation, we can do a couple things. The solution to this equation is provided by two things. First of all, we want this delta omega 0 t to be equal to phi. And that's just so we can match this term with this term. We're sort of equating these two by equating the components. And then once you've done that, these two terms cancel, and you can do a little bit of algebra to show that the value of b must be equal to sigma sub s squared over sigma sub w squared plus sigma sub s squared times L over 2. So once you equate these two terms, then you can cancel them and you can equate these two. So the combination of these two values produces a solution to this equation. This term we can rearrange algebraically to write it as 2 over L times sigma sub s squared divided by 2 over L times sigma sub W squared plus sigma sub S squared. We can go a little bit further and we can look at the significance of this with respect to the signal-to-noise ratio. Because sigma sub S is the power of our desired signal and sigma sub W is the power of the noise signal. So if we note that the input signal-to-noise ratio is just the power of the signal, sigma sub s squared, well, that's just a0 squared over 2 for a sine wave, divided by the power of the noise, well, that's just sigma sub w squared. We can rewrite this in terms of the signal-to-noise ratio. If we essentially just divide by sigma sub w squared, we've got the input signal-to-noise ratio in the numerator, and we have 2 over L plus the input signal-to-noise ratio. And then we can take this 2 over L and put it on the outside. So this value of B is essentially now expressed in terms of the input signal-to-noise ratio. And that's a good thing because that tells us something about how this filter is behaving. If the signal-to-noise ratio is very, very large, which is a good thing, that means the noise is small with respect to the signal, what does this converge to? We'll have a large number over a large number. These two will cancel, essentially, and we'll just have 2 over L. And that's what's to be expected, because if there was no noise, then the form of this filter should be identically equal to the, essentially the input signal of interest. If, on the other hand, the signal-to-noise ratio becomes very small, for example, if this is equal to 0, we have 0 over 2 over L times 2 over L, or 0. That basically says there's not much we can do. If the signal-to-noise ratio is 0, that says I cannot really distinguish the noise from the signal just looking at energy, looking at powers, which is essentially what this filter does. So this is interesting because it does in fact give us some idea of how this filter behaves as a function of the signal-to-noise ratio. And we get some idea that for moderate to high signal-to-noise ratios, this filter should work fairly well. But as the signal-to-noise ratio becomes very low, the filter doesn't work as well. Well, one of the reasons that this formulation was of interest to us was to give us the ability to remove noise from a signal prior to perhaps downstream processing. For example, when you have a hands-free microphone in a car, the two ways you might use that, one is to talk to somebody else over your cell phone. And in that case, the desired goal of the system would be that the resulting speech signal would be cleaner, more pleasant to listen to. But a second application might be to actually talk to a speech recognition system, perhaps a navigation system or some such thing. And in that case, you would hope that the performance of the back-end pattern recognition system that was processing the cleaned-up signal, you know, this signal minus the noise, you would hope that that system would do better. Well, if the limits, if this noise canceller degrades as the signal-to-noise ratio goes to zero, you might worry about whether at low signal-to-noise ratios, which is where you really want this system to work, whether you're going to get a significant improvement in performance, enough of an improvement to justify doing this. And in fact, we can see from this equation that the impact of this filtering will not be that great when signal-to-noise ratios are zero, close to zero, typically below about 10 dB signal-to-noise ratio. You will not get much gain out of doing this. And the problem with this has been, if the signal-to-noise ratio is above about 10 to 15 dB, the pattern recognition systems tend to work pretty well on their own. And they tend to be robust to noise in their own right based on the pattern recognition technology itself, which is developed to be robust to noise. If, on the other hand, your noise cancellation algorithm will not be effective at low signal-to-noise ratios, well, guess what? Those just happen to be the conditions where you're interested in doing noise cancellation. For example, if we talk about helicopters or airplane cockpits and such. So this equation actually tells us a lot about the fact that these filters are not going to work very well at low signal-to-noise ratios. And that's why, in fact, for many years, this technology sat on the shelf, because it did not really do much for the conditions that we were most interested in. But what we have done by going through this analysis is shown that the matched filter solution, which was arrived at from a completely different point of view, matched filters were developed using a maximum likelihood detection type scenario, is optimal in a least square sense. The least squares solution, the least squares approach, the least squares filter produces essentially the same solution as the matched filter. As we would expect from a least squares solution, the results are independent of the phase of the signal, which is actually a big issue if you go to try to implement matched filters, because matched filters require the way they're implemented requires some kind of synchronization with the transmission system. And again, if you don't have background in communication theory on that, not a big deal. But the least squares solution, as we would expect, you'll notice that the original angle phi does not appear anywhere in these solutions for the coefficients, because the coefficients are derived based on autocorrelations and cross-correlations and things that are generally blind to phase. And the attraction of these kinds of solutions relative to things like match filtering, with match filtering, you need to know something about the form of the transmitted signal. The attraction of the adaptive noise cancellers is that you don't really need to know anything about the signal. You can derive everything you know from the autocorrelation and the cross-correlation coefficients, and these can be estimated from the data that you're measuring. So that's why these techniques were of great interest and still are of great interest, because they're constructed from things that we can measure from the problem space itself. So you can build essentially an adaptive noise canceling chip and implement it and not have to worry about how it's actually being applied. And it can then cancel noise for arbitrary types of signals, which is required if you're going to build headphones or microphones or any of these kinds of devices. You don't need to know, you cannot know what signals these are going to be used with. Now, we might ask, well, what is the gain associated with this filter? So the output of the filter can be computed via convolution. Y of n is just going to be f of n convolved with s of n. And we can go ahead and plug in our solution for the filter, b cosine omega 0 n t, convolved with s of n, well, and actually d of n here because we have s of n plus the noise. And this convolution can be written as two terms. We're going to have the convolution of these two cosine waves plus the filtering of this noise with this cosine. This is not a multiplication, this is a convolution. And we know that since this is a linear filter, the noise component can be written just in terms of previous samples of the noise times the cosine signal. So the output consists of two terms. We have a term associated with the signal and a term associated with the noise. The signal term is B times A0 over 2 times L times cosine. The noise term is B times this weighted sum of the noise times cosine. So we can then go ahead and compute the output noise power. We can take the expectation of Y squared, Y sub W squared, and that can be written as b squared times the sum from I equals 0 to L minus 1 of cosine squared omega 0 I times t times the noise power sigma sub w. Because this is just a orthogonal series of cosines, so if you sum those, the cross terms go to 0 and you just take the sum of the amplitudes. So this is just L times b squared over sigma sub w squared divided by 2. And therefore, we can then compute the output signal-to-noise ratio as the ratio of the power of the input divided by the power of the output. Well, the power of the noise. Well, the power of the input is A squared over 2. The power of the noise is this the power of Y sub W, the noise, the filtered noise, which is just this term. So the the ratio of these two, if we go ahead and use for B our optimal value of B, the ratio of these two then just turns out to be L times sigma sub S squared over sigma sub W squared, or just L times the signal-to-noise ratio of the input. And that's an interesting result, because that tells us that the signal-to-noise ratio output of this system, the amount of noise cancellation that we do, is related to the signal-to-noise ratio of the input times the length of the filter, which says that the length of the performance grows linearly with the length of the filter. Now, you may think, well, that's great, linearly with the length of the filter. But if you think about this in a dB sense, if we take the log of this, that means that the performance of the filter is going to grow with the log of the length of the filter. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? What? Is that good or is that bad? If I tell you, here's this chip, it does noise cancellation, and its performance in dB is related to the log of the length of the filter. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Good, but not so good. Explain. That's a good answer.
I mean, if we can, I mean, as a link of the filter, we can achieve the performance.
So here in the wonderful world of academia, it's a good thing, right? Yeah. You can publish your paper. You can say, look, as the filter gets longer, performance gets better and better. Okay, but now let's go back to, you know, you want a job that pays you good money when you graduate, right? So now we go back to the real world and say, okay, so you go to your boss, you're working in the automotive space, and, you know, you say, well, the signal-to-noise ratio currently is 5 dB. If I can clean that up to 15 dB, we can get good performance with this system, this hands-free microphone. So all you need to do is do 10 dB of improvement. But if you compute the length of the filter needed to do that, well, if there's a logarithmic relationship, that means you're going to have to add lots and lots of filter coefficients to get relatively modest gains in signal-to-noise ratio. And how does the length of the filter impact your overall system cost? If I make the filter longer, how does that impact your implementation of this approach? It increased cost because it's increasing what about the system? The computational complexity. It's also sort of increases the power as well. So this has been another drawback of a lot of the noise cancellation systems. The improvement you get in signal-to-noise ratio is relatively modest for the number of new additional multiply adds, you could say, that you have to do. And often, because of that, the systems are not considered practical because they don't produce enough for the computational resources that you have, maybe one DSP, they don't produce enough improvement in signal-to-noise ratio. This is the same reason that you have not seen multiple microphones used in cars commonly, because the performance, the improvement in signal-to-noise ratio when you use multiple microphones is roughly about 1 or 1/2 dB per microphone. So to get a 10 dB improvement in signal-to-noise ratio, you'd have to use 10 or 15 microphones. And the increase in cost for doing that, when you look at the manufacturing cost of that, having to insert these microphones in the car, have work run all the wires and do all that in a production line, that cost far exceeds the benefit of the system. And it's the same kind of thing here. For many years, this was not used in the car because of that kind of a problem, the cost. Now, another reason this wasn't used, has anyone actually used some of these noise-canceling headphones? Or been in a demo? There's another sort of drawback to these approaches, which we don't really talk about here, which is, remember, these approaches are trying to cancel the signal by essentially injecting another signal that cancels it by subtraction. What happens if these two signals are not quite synced or not quite right? When you inject this second signal and it doesn't cancel, it's going to increase the amount of energy, right? So in a lot of the early noise cancellation systems, they would work well under very controlled conditions, but in practice, when they didn't work, some of the very early systems would actually create much larger amounts of noise. And that was really dangerous. In fact, some of the early systems had that problem that the noise, the output could become very large. So imagine you're listening to your music, a truck drives, rolls by or something, and all of a sudden your ears get, you know, blown away because the headphones are outputting a very large signal because the cancellation isn't working. So it took quite a while for them to figure out how to prevent the system from becoming sort of unstable like that. And that's the reason there's been, one of the reasons there's been a lot of research done on this in the past 20 years. Now, the last thing that I'll mention today, which again, I'll just sort of quote the results, since this is not, I think it's good to be aware of this, but it's not critical to our goals in this course. We talked with the LMS filter about convergence, and we said that the convergence could be related to the eigenvalues of the autocorrelation matrix. And if you set the adaptation constant so that it's less than 2 over the maximum eigenvalue, you would be safe. The filter would converge. And then we said, well, this isn't really practical, so we showed that we could actually relate that to the power of the input signal using a more constrained value for the adaptation constant. If we set the adaptation constant more conservatively, the filter will converge slower, but it will converge and we won't have to know a priori what the eigenstructure of the input signal is. Well, for the adaptive line enhancer, you can do the same kind of analysis and you can show that the convergent constant is related to the inverse of the eigenstructure of the signal. A little bit different, but generally that's the idea. This term takes a little bit of explanation. But the eigenstructure, it's related to the noise plus the eigenvalue, the noise power. But again, this is not useful because we don't really know the eigenstructure of the signal. So we can, with a little bit more of analysis, relate that to essentially the power of the signal. Because we know the signal of interest is a sum of sine waves, and we know that the power of that signal can be related in terms of a sum of those amplitude squares. So there's actually a relation. We can set the convergent, the adaptation constant, to something that's essentially related to the power of the input. But for the adaptive line canceller, since we assume noise plus a sum of sine waves, that power can be computed as the sum of the amplitude squares of the signal. Unfortunately, estimating the noise power can be problematic. So typically the adaptation constants are set very conservatively so that the filter does not diverge. And the trade-off there is that it will be convert somewhat slower, but be a little safer. So similar relationships exist to guide us in how to set the adaptation constant for the ALE system. So what we've done today is to introduce two applications of adaptive filters, adaptive noise cancellation and adaptive line enhancement. We've derived estimation equations for these filters and discussed the SNR properties of these filters, and we discussed a little bit about what happens when there's less than ideal conditions encountered, particularly what happens when there's leakage between the desired signal and the input signal. Now, most of the rest of the book actually deals with applications of adaptive filtering. And it's my goal to go through these fairly quickly because most of these, this is really old stuff. I mean, well, it's somewhat historically dated. So we'll continue working through some of these applications so that you'll be familiar with them. We won't be deriving all the equations in great detail, But that should get us through about half the course. And then with the second half of the course, I want to introduce the contemporary view on adaptation, which involves concepts like Bayesian estimation, maximum likelihood, map adaptation, and things like that. And we'll show you how all this is done from a statistical point of view. So we'll continue next class with the rest of Chapter 5, and then we'll just kind of plow through the remaining chapters in the book, probably spending a couple lectures on each chapter. And then that should get us to about the middle of the course, which will be good because then we have plenty of time to look at some new stuff. Okay, so I'll see you on Tuesday.
I have a problem. In the first slide, you see they have an agency without external returns. But
yeah, that was this.
ALE.
Did I say ANSI? I thought I said ALE.
Without.
Yeah, that was.
An old ANSI with.
Well, this is. Okay, so this is actually. This formulation is actually considered ANC without an external.
ALE,
right.
Is the ALE,
ALE
without,
right.
Because
right.
So
they're both basically the same thing. It's just with ALE, you're assuming sine waves and you're assuming no external reference.
Are you going to talk about the noise cancellation adapter and that you have to use another noise?
Right.
So when you collect the noise and when you collect the speed noise, they are the same time?
No. So if you, for example, when they implement this in automobiles, there's typically a microphone on the visor of your car. There's also a microphone underneath the seat of the car. The microphone underneath the seat is collecting the X of N, which is the noise estimate. The microphone in the visor is collecting signal plus noise.
They're
collecting it simultaneously. It's a two-channel system. Now, the ALE doesn't use the second microphone. It just takes a time-delayed version of the input.
Why can't you simulate such active noise?
Well, you can. That's what I was explaining. That's a technique called spectral subtraction, which uses a completely different approach. There's many, many different noise cancellation algorithms. This is just one of them, based on adaptive filtering.
Spectral subtraction is also one.
Spectral, there's a lot of variants beyond spectral subtraction, but the basic concept is used extensively. There's also, we use a form of noise cancellation in speech processing, which involves estimating long-term filters, short-term filters, and then using the long-term filter as the estimate of the noise, and using a short-term filter as the estimate of the speech signal. And that's a process called RASPA. Oh. So there are a lot of different noise cancellation techniques.
Okay.
This is just, I wanted to show you an application of adaptive LMS filtering that is used for noise cancellation.